Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's Current Sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shot fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What's up, beautiful people? Welcome to this Monday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, and I am coming to you all on this beautiful November 9th, 2020. Wow, it's a gorgeous Monday, folks. I mean, it was beautiful all weekend. Temperatures in the 70s, the sun out. No, not a cloud in the sky. The sky blue. I mean, just amazing. It's amazing that we're seeing weather like this in the beginning of November. And, you know, I talked about it last week when we were getting similar weather to close out the week going into the weekend that, hey, get out and enjoy it, folks. Get out and enjoy it because we live in Michigan, all right? We live in Michigan. That's all I got to say. But what a weekend. What a weekend, right? I mean, that was, you know, other than the beautiful weather being a story, you know, we capped off election week, right? That was a very, very busy weekend because we finally got the results of the presidential race on Saturday. And then in the world of sports, all right, let's just be real. Let's just be real, Michigan sports fans. It was not a great weekend for Michigan sports. On Saturday, we saw Michigan State just completely get mollywopped at the hands of Iowa on the road. So much so that, you know, I think for the first time, us media members and the public saw an angry Mel Tucker. I mean, he was really like turning red almost in the post-game press conference, you know, and he talked about, you know, pressure and environment and how, you know, this coaching staff and the players are going to go to work this week back in East Lansing to try and put the wheels back on the track. But quite surprising because the week prior to that, this team seemingly was surging. You know, you upset Michigan. Rocky Lombardi throwing over 300 yards, you know, in every game so far this season leading up to Iowa. And then you have a performance like that where you give up 40-plus points to Iowa. Offense doesn't click. Just so many things went wrong. It's hard to pinpoint one aspect that was encouraging if you are a Michigan State football fan. And then Michigan, you know, much was made about the streak against Indiana. You know, Michigan winning something like 24 straight games against Indiana. But to put in perspective just how bad this Michigan football team is, they go out there and lose to Indiana, snapping that incredible win streak against them. It's time for Jim Harbaugh to go. I think we all know that right now. Michigan fans, every Michigan fan I talk to now, you know, there used to be a few out there that say, well, we're still going to give him a chance. He's still, you know, it would just come up with so many excuses, despite him having multiple years under his belt now as the head coach of the Michigan football team out in Ann Arbor. But now there are no excuses. There are no excuses. And just like I said at the beginning of the year, when it comes to Mel Tucker getting a pass because of the year that is COVID and it being a different season and this being his first year and everything that he's had to go through since his hiring, there are no passes for Jim Harbaugh, pandemic or not. You got to start winning football games, and that should have been happening a long time ago, let alone this year. So Michigan has a horrible outing against Indiana and loses. And then on Sunday, the Detroit Lions looked pitiful. Looked absolutely pitiful, just like they normally do, though, right? I mean, why are we surprised? They are the Detroit Lions, for goodness sake. You know, they go out there and get it handed to them at the hands of Kirk Cousins, former Michigan State football great, and the Minnesota Vikings. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, I just put out a simple tweet, and I've been saying this for a long time here on Current Sports. We all know that the leadership that is Matt Patricia and Bob Quinn is not the right leadership for this team moving forward. Detroit Lions fans, I have asked you every single week the simple question, do you want Matt Patricia and Bob Quinn gone? The majority of you that I've talked to have said, yes, Al. Well, I then respond with, well, if you want them gone, you know what has to happen? Your Detroit Lions, and I know how much this hurts, but you should be used to it by now because this team, this is what they do. You got to go out there and lose a bunch of games so that the Fords, Sheila Ford, looks at it and says, okay, yes, this is a failed experiment. We got to move on. So I just put out a simple tweet that, you know, why are Lions fans complaining? And why are you surprised? But why are you complaining? That's the main one. Because don't you want to see a change in this regime? Well, this is a good thing. Try and look at the glasses half full. You lose yet another game, and that's just one step closer to getting rid of Matt Patricia. And, you know, the majority of responses that I got, all responses except one on my Twitter feed was negative. And just to put in perspective the frustration of the Lions fan base, and I'm going to call him out because he called me out. You know, that's what we do here in sports debate, Twitterverse world. At Scottish Caveman, Alan McVean, who is a listener of the show, you know, he tweeted me and said, Al, we know you aren't a Lions fan. Really? Why compound the pain? It shows a complete lack of class, which I did think you had. And and then this thread goes on. Because again, I tweeted out, why are Lions fans complaining? LOL. This is good for the franchise. Time for a complete overhaul, and stacking losses helps that cause. So Alan responds with that. Then I come back at him, and I say, I'm just keeping it real. Matt Patricia and Bob Quinn aren't the right people for the job. You need them gone. Losses help make that happen. Stop being a prisoner of the moment for a second and think about the future of your franchise. And then Alan tweets me back and says, you're a Dallas Cowboys fan, unabashed and complete. But you make fun of the Lions. It is unneeded and a complete cheap shot. I can honestly say I was a listener, no longer, but I guess it doesn't matter to you, keeping it real. Then I say, oh, Alan, making fun? The Lions make fun of themselves about every Sunday. LOL. Lions fans have to start holding their team accountable, just like I do with my pitiful Cowboys, because we are indeed pitiful, even though we did have a pretty solid outing against the Pittsburgh Steelers, who are undefeated at 8-0 for the first time in franchise history. Then Alan responds with, I have been a Lions fan since 1967, so perhaps your lecturing me is unnecessary and arrogant. I'm really done with both your opinions and your condescending attitude. I used to enjoy your talents, but perhaps I will hold you to a higher accountability. I mean, really? Did it really need to get that personal about me talking about how bad the Lions are? A franchise that deserves all of the criticism in the world, that deserves all of the jokes in the world, because you guys spend your good, hard-earned money supporting this team, going out there and supporting this franchise, buying tickets season after season after season, and something more valuable than money is time, and you spend your Sundays sitting on that couch or at the game supporting this team, watching and hoping that they're turning around and they disappoint you every single year. Yet, when I just say, look, you need a complete overhaul because this leadership has failed, you come at me and make it personal. I just don't get it. So I was feeling petty and I responded and said, 1967, I don't know how you've done it. That deserves some kind of medal or at least a participation trophy. Relax. It's just sports, brother. Be blessed. Oh, boy. So that was my Twitter interaction with a listener, or I should say former listener now, Alan McVean at Scottish Caveman is his name on Twitter. But, I brought up that conversation. I don't mean to put him on blast, but I brought up that conversation because I'm really curious to know if that's how you Lions fans feel. You know, I'm not making fun of you when I say, you know, why are you guys complaining? This is a good thing. I'm just, again, I'm keeping it real. You want to see Matt Patricia and Bob Quinn come back? If so, keep being competitive and keep winning games. But looking on the bright side, if you don't want to see them come back, you got to keep stacking losses and you got to make that case real convincing once the season ends. All right. So, you know, I sat back and said to myself, all right, do I want to spend another Monday of current sports recapping this horrible weekend in Michigan sports, recapping the Michigan State loss, recapping the Michigan loss, recapping the Detroit Lions embarrassment? I said no. So I thought this would be a great opportunity to schedule an interview today. And it's a great one because she is one of my favorite guests that we've ever had on Current Sports. So we've got a full feature interview coming your way right now. Now, her name is Maya Washington. If that name doesn't ring a bell, I'll bring him another name. Jean Washington. Yeah, I know the ears of Spartan fans, longtime Spartan fans everywhere just went up because Jean Washington was one of the greatest Michigan State football players of all time. Maya Washington is his daughter. Again, Jean Washington, the former MSU football standout, went on to play in the NFL, an amazing guy. And those who have tuned into the show, you guys know that Maya Washington has been working on a documentary that profiles a very important moment, not just in Michigan State football history, but in college football history. So Maya and I, we talked on Zoom, and she has a film that will be premiering on national television tomorrow night on the Big Ten Network. That's right, folks. The Big Ten Network is set to debut Through the Banks of the Red Cedar, which is a profound film about Michigan State University's football team in the 1960s and how the team battled segregation on the field. Maya is the daughter, again, of a former NFL wide receiver and former MSU football standout, Jean Washington. And she joined me virtually to discuss the film and the excitement behind the television broadcast premiere. So instead of, you know, raining on your parade, that is this beautiful, beautiful Monday, enjoy this feature conversation with Maya Washington. That has been 2020. First off, how have you been holding up? How is your dad? How is the whole Washington family?
Well, my dad has a mantra: every day is a gift. And we have been living by that throughout 2020. And it's incredible to know that we started the year celebrating the life of Hank Bulla, getting to travel to different places during Black History Month to share the film. And then, of course, the world dramatically changed in March for most of us. And subsequently, a lot of people have lost a lot of loved ones, and we are included in that. There's a lot of people who are important to Spartan Nation who've passed away in the past year, as well as personal friends, extended family members, and we just take every day as a gift. So we are filled with gratitude, we're filled with hope and light, and understand that tomorrow isn't promised to any of us, so we make the most of every single day we're given.
Without a doubt, without a doubt. So well said, Maya. And I want to start here. When you found out, and because you've been working on this for so long, and to finally see it come to this point, when you found out, though, that the Big Ten Network would be broadcasting your body of work, what was your reaction, and how did that whole thing come about?
Well, of course, I was just really excited because I understood what it meant for our really devoted, enthusiastic, kind, loving supporters, right, who followed this project, including you, you know, who remember sort of when I was just getting started in 2012 and 2013, inspired by the death of Bubba Smith in 2011. And so for this timing to be the fall of 2020 after, I don't know anyone who's had a great year. I think we're all just grateful that we're still here, that we made it. And so to sort of have this happen now at a time when people really need something to be excited about, when people really are interested and have an appetite for stories like ours about race and sports. And of course, you and others who were plugged into this project a long time ago understood how important these issues are and were prepared and ready and enthusiastic about having these conversations that previously might have been considered difficult conversations, when really what happened at Michigan State with my dad's team in the 60s yes, was difficult, was not easy for them, but is a perfect example of unity, of people coming together and being on the right side of history. And so I think it's really exciting that more people will be able to engage in this kind of conversation that we've been having for the past 7-8 years now.
Yeah. And you know, Maya, when I woke up today and I was, thinking about today's interview, just thinking about this year and everything that's happened. And, you know, I couldn't help but you know, when looking at the story of Through the Banks of the Red Cedar and what you tell, you know, talking about this incredible football team in the 1960s and how this team battled segregation on the field. I mean, you look at what's happened this year, the protest after the killing of George Floyd. You know, I could bring up, you know, Breonna Taylor and the outrage that is sparked in the Black community. The timing of this film to come out right now during this year and these conversations that we're having with racial inequality and how we are seeing athletes everywhere, no matter what the sport, protest and use their platforms, you know, in a unique way that are saying, hey, we are standing up for injustice. The timing of this film is so fitting for right now. Right, Maya?
You know, it really is. And of course, my family, we live in Minneapolis. So certainly this summer was a hit home summer for us to have the murder of George Floyd and the unrest that followed while we're in the middle of the pandemic. And to see that happening throughout the nation, where other unarmed citizens were killed by police or off duty, you know, police just jogging, right? So, of course, those things hit home for us. And I'm really sad, you know, that we had to have a pandemic and so many more people killed just within weeks of one another for all of America to stand up and say, this isn't okay. This isn't who we are. This isn't what we believe in and how we feel we should be treated by one another. And I think that's what's really beautiful and pivotal about this shift that we're seeing, that obviously for years, many Black and Brown folks have been speaking up about these issues and how they affect the Native American community, the Latinx community, Asian American communities, immigrant communities, people with disabilities, LGBTQIA individuals, and of course, the Black community. And to find ourselves in a time where, because of the pandemic, there wasn't a lot of other distractions going on from people bringing their attention to these issues. So I think the timing is unbelievable. It's fitting. Of course, it would have been nice if people wanted to have these conversations through my film back in 2013 or 2014 or 2015 or 2016 or 2017 or 2018 or 19. But I'm grateful that in 2020, athletes especially have the opportunity and the support of the organizations where they attend a school or the organizations where they play a professional sport, that they are provided a place and a space to talk about these issues that do affect all Americans, just some perhaps more intensely than others. But I think what we saw this summer is, no, we're all in this together. And I'm just really grateful that for whatever reason, I was ahead of the zeitgeist, which I think is grace, and that we've been able to do this work, go to different colleges and universities all throughout the country long before 2020. So we have a beautiful, beautiful grassroots audience that's intergenerational, that's people from every generation on the planet right now have engaged in the content that we created. And I really see us as having created this together, that this wasn't just something that my dad and I did, or it's not just a film about my dad. I see this as a film about American history and about all of the people who participated in what happened at Michigan State during Duffy Doherty's era, as well as John Hanna's era at Michigan State, to see equality and inclusion and really make the changes to the demographics of football that we see on field today.
And just a quick follow-up to that, Maya, you know, you it just hit me. Yeah. You mentioned you guys being out there in Minneapolis when the protest and the murder of George Floyd happens. What was that like for you? Were you directly out there in the streets protesting right alongside other people, other Black and Brown people? Or were you just kind of sitting back and just kind of in shock of what was happening? What was that like for you?
Well, it was, you know, as someone who's been steeped in history for this journey of making this film and bringing it out into the world, and I'm also working on a memoir about my relationship with my dad and this chapter in history. And it was eerie as days went by to see how much it mirrored the summer of 1967. And to be honest, I was quite concerned when the National Guard was brought in and the city of Minneapolis was looking to protect itself. The governor was looking to, you know, do the things that were, I don't know about necessary, but were important, steps that were important to take to keep residents safe. And really, my observation of what happened from folks on the ground, and as, you know, someone who obviously cares deeply about what happened to one of my neighbors in Minneapolis, to be murdered on the street on videotape. And this is, you know, the second time something similar to this has happened. Philando Castile, just years earlier, there was another incident with a young man named Jamar Clark. Mm-hmm. So the thing that was most disturbing wasn't just that there were people protesting this death, but there were people from outside of Minnesota as well as people from within Minnesota who really weren't there to empathize or sympathize or support the people of Minneapolis and St. Paul who were grieving, but who sought to wreak havoc. And what the national media wasn't reporting that my friends and neighbors were reporting is that white supremacists were driving up and down the streets and intimidating people and leaving hate mail on people's lawns. And that some of that devastation, even though it's being reported in national news and even in sometimes our local news, you know, tried to make it look like there were these just unhinged black and brown folks and rebel white people out in the streets just burning everything down in the name of George Floyd. And that was not the reality that I saw, that I experienced, that I heard from people. So it was a real challenging situation because literally overnight, important black and brown and indigenous businesses, community centers were burned to the ground. This was not the work necessarily of peaceful protesters, right? This event sort of allowed for significant rage that people had at the direction our country has gone in terms of just sort of taking care of one another and sort of basic values of decency and fairness and, you know, all of those things. On top of that, there were groups that took advantage of that moment and had their own agendas and sought to do destruction. And so in terms of where I saw myself in all of that, you know, I'm kind of the responsible child for my parents. I have two other siblings who have families, and I'm sort of that, you know, single one who doesn't have kids of their own yet. So my parents are my, you know, my top priority as they're, you know, aging into their kind of their mid 70s. And so just trying to keep them safe from COVID and keep myself safe from COVID, it really hindered what I could do on the ground or in the street, so to speak. But I did my best to be there for community and mobilize folks and resources really behind the scenes. And that's kind of my style, to just make sure that people had the resources they needed, that to the best of my ability in my work in media, to be able to kind of offer that other narrative that mainstream media wasn't covering, which was the extent to which my white friends, my black friends, my Latinx friends, my Native American friends, you know, were experiencing this other threat of violence that really was targeting them because of their race or ethnicity or because of their interest in being empathetic to George Floyd's family and to the greater cause for the idea that black lives do matter, you know, in America. And so I did accidentally find myself at a demonstration in the suburbs. I went to support some black families thinking it would be maybe three or four black families. And in fact, it was thousands of people, many of them young white kids who had gathered and marched through the streets of their community. And I was, you know, just kind of showing up in solidarity. Next thing you know, I'm marching and kind of chaperoning, you know, all these high school kids and listening to them kind of speak their truths. And the students of color among them really having a voice and having a platform. And so as painful as this summer has been, it's been really beautiful, though, to see a lot of people stand up and speak up. And I've even, you know, had positive encounters with law enforcement, which was important at a time when things were very scary. So it's a very nuanced time. And I just don't think it's literally as black and white as the media wants to portray it and wants to sort of rely on tropes of you know, angry anarchist protesters and these, you know, the trope of this idea that cops are crooked and all of these things. It's bigger than that. It's deeper than that. And it's far more complex than that. If you look at history, the things that were on the table that people were feeling in the summer of 1967, access to housing, access to dignified jobs that pay a living wage, access to education, access to good health care and health outcomes, and relationships with law enforcement and people who serve and protect your community. These were issues that were on the table in 1967. And here we are all these years later, maybe on the cusp of figuring a lot of these things out. And what I saw, what I experienced, and what's still happening in the Twin Cities is complex. It's layered. And there's a lot of people working really hard to try to figure this out, to heal, but also to seek justice for George Floyd and his family, understanding there's so many people who haven't seen that kind of justice in their lifetime. So time will tell how this story plays out.
Without a doubt. What a moment, Maya. And now, you know, transitioning to what we're going to see this week on the Big Ten Network with your film Through the Banks of the Red Cedar. This has certainly been a labor of love for you. I want to ask a two-parter here. For those who have no idea about this story, just a quick synopsis of it. What do you want them to take away and learn when they sit down on their couches tomorrow night at 8 p.m. and watch your amazing body of work on the Big Ten Network? Because I know this has been quite the journey for you, hasn't it?
It has been quite the journey. If you would have told me, in 2011 after Bubba Smith passed away, and I started to hear these stories about the Underground Railroad of college football, that Duffy Doherty created a pipeline in recruiting black athletes from the South, brought them to Michigan State. They win back-to-back Big Ten championships, are named national champions 2 years in a row. And that if you'd have told me, okay, after you pay your respects to Bubba Smith, you're going to spend a significant amount of time saying thank you to him, right? In a very unique way for the basically recommendation he gave on behalf of my dad through his father, Willie Ray Smith, who was a coach at Charlton Pollard High School. So my dad and Bubba were rivals in a way. They went to rival schools in all black segregated schools. So they couldn't go to the white schools in their community because of the color of their skin. So in order for there to be extracurricular sport competition, they could only compete against other black schools. So to have someone 100 miles away in Beaumont, Texas, my dad grew up in LaPorte, recommend you for a scholarship at a school in the North. Your parents have never left the state of Texas. So to think about going to Michigan, specifically Michigan State, to get a scholarship to use a public restroom for the first time, to sit in a restaurant, to go to hotels and spend the night in the Kellogg Center, you know, just basic things that people take for granted now. I literally spent a significant chapter of my life since he passed away to tell this story on film as a thank you. And so I'm just so, so grateful that we're here and that more people will learn this history. So what I want people to learn is this contribution that this team made, that this coach made, that this university president, John Hanna, made. He was overseeing the Civil Rights Commission in America. So you have a university president who's committed to civil rights, who's seeing firsthand the violations that are happening, the human rights issues that are existing across cultures and backgrounds throughout the United States, and is in a position to support the writing of major legislation that we look to today, the Civil Rights Act of 64, Voting Rights Act. All of these things were built on the foundation of the work that John Hanna was doing for the federal government, but then that trickled down, so to speak, to Michigan State. So I want people to know this history. And if you are a Spartan on this planet and you do not know what happened at Michigan State between the mid to late 40s through the early 70s, you are missing out on an important aspect of American history, but of course, Michigan State University history. And I would argue if you are someone with ties to the Big Ten on the planet or ties to the NCAA in some way, this is significant what happened there. So I hope people have their eyes open to a chapter of history that just has yet to be given its full due. But I also hope people consider the possibility that history is within their own household, that we cannot wait till 2021 to sit down and have those kinds of meaningful conversations with our parents, our grandparents, our aunts, our uncles, you know, whoever around us is still here to share these important stories and to do some research around them, because that's what's beautiful about our country and about all of us, is that we're all a part of making history in our own way. It doesn't matter how big a role you choose to take in public life or how small, we all have the potential to contribute in a way that will have a lasting impact on future generations. And I think that is awesome.
More with Maya Washington when we come back from this first break. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to the Monday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. All right, again, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we've got a full-hour feature interview with Maya Washington, the daughter of former MSU football standout and NFL wide receiver Gene Washington, who joins me today to discuss the film Through the Banks of the Red Cedar, in which she is the director of profiling Michigan State University's football team in the 1960s and how the team battled segregation on the field. Duffy Doherty, recruiting black players, and not looking at color, but looking at talent. Here's that conversation as we continue this hour-long feature chat with Maya Washington.
You know, when talking about this this film over time, you know, we have, you know, I've touched upon the amazing relationship that you and your amazing father have, and how you always talk about this, how this process of making this film, how it has brought you guys closer together, and you have learned so much more about your dad in the process. Can you talk about, and you just mentioned, I mean, you're working on a memoir that talks about that relationship between you two. Can you touch upon that relationship and how that even makes this film that much more special personally for you?
Yeah, I mean, similar to if you would have told me in 2011 that my dad and I would be traveling all over the country and sharing this film with people and getting to sort of have this precious chapter for us that a lot of, you know, adult children don't get to have with their parents, you know, where we're taking flights together, we're having breakfast in a different city or having dinner together and really spending quality time outside of, you know, major holidays, which I think is the case for a lot of people as you grow up and sort of get into your career and your life. You may not see your parents or grandparents or the guardians that raised you often. And so it's not lost on me, not only how many people have lost their parents or for whatever reason don't have relationships with parents, and to, you know, just have my little curiosity sparked to say, wait a minute, maybe there's more to my dad than I realized, and to spend as much time as I did learning about him. You know, when I started this process, I am an artist, consciously I guess, gravitated to the arts because it's just how I'm situated. It's where my gifts are. And it's, you know, clearly turned into my purpose, right, is to use those gifts in service of others. Mm-hmm. But there was also a part of me that said, you know what, Gene Washington is Gene Washington. Like, I will never run as fast as he does, you know. We weren't as enthusiastic about opening up opportunities for women in football when I was growing up as we are now, which is very exciting. I love seeing what we're seeing now with so many women identified coaches and a lot of cool things happening now, but that wasn't the case, you know, when I was growing up. And so I think I really did choose the arts as a means to have my own voice and sort of develop an identity separate from both of my parents, who were very successful and contributed a lot to the Minneapolis-St. Paul community. And to get through most of, you know, my young adult life and realize, wow, I really knew nothing about my dad's time at Michigan State or the Minnesota Vikings. I was busy doing my own thing. He was busy, you know, working in the business arena and focusing on diversity and inclusion at major corporations. And sort of, I didn't know him as, you know, this track champion or this football player. I just knew him as a guy who put on a suit and went to work every day. Our relationship was sort of survival based, which I think is common for a lot of parents and their adolescent kids and teenagers, where it's like, okay, did you eat? Okay, where are you going? Can you give me a ride to XYZ? Yes, no, yeah, you know, those are kind of the interactions that I had with both my parents, really, you know, never separated from them except for, like, you know, going off to camp or going off to college. And even throughout college, when my dad would call to check on me, hey, what's the weather like in California? Because I went to USC. Oh, it's 70 degrees. It's beautiful. It never rains. Great. Okay, well, and then we'd get off the phone. whereas now, I mean, I'm friends with his friends. You know, I can have a 2-hour conversation with Jones. You know, he and I have conversations. I'm following the teams. I'm following the Spartans in a way that I wasn't before. I'm following the Minnesota Vikings. We're going to games together. We're having these, like, really beautiful, deeper, meaningful conversations. And he better understands my world because we made this film together. So he has a better understanding of what I do and what, you know, why I'm super busy when I'm in production and all of those different things. It is such a gift. So even though, yes, it would be easy to say, goodness gracious, could someone have thought to air this film a long time ago? Or could someone have thought to support support this process a long time ago? But the truth is, you know, had this arrived any sooner than 2020 in the way that it's arrived, I would not have had this beautiful time to connect with my father, connect with his teammates and their families, and so many people in Spartan Nation and people outside of that Spartan community who have embraced us, who have embraced the story and really taken it as their own and are as hopefully proud as we are of this moment, that it's not just us in this moment. And I don't know what kind of blessing from God, you know, this is, that I would get to thank Bubba Smith, get closer to my dad, and share that experience with thousands of people all over the country. It just doesn't get any better than that.
Well, without a doubt, Maya. And I'm curious. First off, can you tell us again, remind my audience out there, when and where people will be able to see it? Is the Big Ten Network going to air it more than once as well?
The plan is to air it two additional times before the end of the year, but I don't have information on when that will be. So if there are people who are not sure if they're going to tune in on Tuesday night, I would really encourage you to tune in on Tuesday night. And I think the people who have been waiting for this film have already, you know, set their DVRs and, you know, synchronized their watches and things like that. So yes, I'm hopeful that it will air two additional times. But my understanding is the network was waiting for the football schedule. And obviously, they're probably going to wait and see how things go Tuesday night. So it is important that people tune in Tuesday night and they can see it on the Big Ten Network, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central Time where I am, and then 5 p.m. Pacific Time.
With this, you know, coming out and finally being released to the public, are there any more plans to, I don't know, maybe make a movie out of this thing? Because it is such a compelling story, Maya. Are there further plans to further this story in other platforms, I should say?
Thank you. Well, you know, I clearly agree with you. I would not have spent this much time on these issues if I didn't find them personally compelling and fascinating. So in terms of like what's next for us, obviously we're really focused on this Big Ten Network opportunity. The people who have supported this film for years and haven't had the opportunity to see it at one of our in-person screenings prior to the pandemic shutdown, I'm always thinking about y'all. I'm always thinking about, you know, how can more and more people see that? So that's kind of where things are headed in 2021. After our Big Ten Network's screenings, I'm going to be looking to see how we can continue to find broadcast space for it. Look into finally, I mean, I get emails every week about DVDs and especially what's cool about an intergenerational film is there are some people who just want to stream it. There's some people who just want to watch it on TV. Then there's people who like, they want a DVD. They want to sit their grandchildren down and put it in the little DVD machine or the Blu-ray machine and, you know, and show it to people. And so those are things that I have to work on and have frankly been a real hurdle for us as an indie production without, you know, major funding to do things like clear the rights of all of this and archival footage to be put on a DVD and released widely. And a lot of those things have been obstacles before, but truly in the wake of the death of George Floyd and so many in the sports community standing up and saying, wait a minute, let's slow down and think about these issues. I'm hopeful a lot of the challenges that I faced with getting support from the major licensing arms of the NFL and the Big Ten and the Rose Bowl, that some of that, hopefully, knock on wood, might be lifted, you know, in 2021 so that I can really get this film to more people and in significant ways. I am working on a memoir and hopefully that will be out in 2021, but I'm not sure yet, but definitely I will let y'all know for sure. You will get the scoop when I have a better idea of that.
Perfect. That is awesome to hear, Maya. And you know what? Final question for you. You know, we do still have a lot of steps to go, but we have come a long way. And I'm just wondering, you know, with the hiring of Mel Tucker now as what, just the second African-American football coach in Michigan State football history, what kind of conversations have you and your father had concerning his hiring and where college football is today?
Well, I think we're really excited about it because certainly this is still an area where African Americans are underrepresented in the ranks of coaching in both the college level as well as in the pros. And so this is totally a step in the right direction for Michigan State. And we're really rooting for him to be successful. And, in general, to see Michigan State University athletics sort of shift into a new chapter in a way. And I think it's just really kind of timely and quite beautiful and quite hopeful because as you and I know, if we can't see it, it's hard to believe it. Mm-hmm. And so if you're growing up and thinking about what you can do as a career, where you can go and what you can accomplish and achieve, if you don't see people who look like you achieving in certain places or spaces, how are you to know that that door has been opened for you? Right. How do you know that you can become Al Martin?
Right, right.
You know, how do you know that you can live out certain dreams that you might have? So I think Coach Tucker is a really important piece of that puzzle. And certainly in a leadership role for the team and for the community, it's really beautiful. And we are definitely rooting for him and rooting for all of Spartan Nation right now.
How amazing is she, right? Just absolutely amazing. Again, the film will debut nationally tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Eastern, through the banks of the Red Cedar, airing on the Big Ten Network tomorrow night at 8 p.m. We are on a 23-hour break. I want you all to be smart, be safe, and be easy, people.